You are listening to the GeoNiagara Radio Show, sponsored by the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 3 of the GeoNiagara Radio Show.
My name is RJ.
And I'm Darren. This week's episode features an interview with Dr. Jonah Bektovsky, Associate Professor of Sociology at Brock University. So I understand you went on a little bit of an excursion during Reading Week.
Me and my friends decided to take a last-minute trip to Guatemala in South America. We had literally only decided we were going to go maybe 10 days before we actually left on the trip. So we flew out of Toronto to Mexico City and finally to Guatemala. All in all, it took about maybe 6 hours to get there. And one of the coolest things we did was we actually climbed an inactive volcano to be able to see an active volcano. So we got up at 3 a.m. to take a 45-minute long bus ride up a mountain through all sorts of curvy, awful streets to get to the top of the mountain, where we then hiked with flashlights because it was dark outside and about 4:30 a.m. We hiked for about 45 minutes to get to the top, and the sun had just started to rise, but in the distance, maybe about 10 minutes after we got up there, you could start to see lava from Volcán de Fuego about 4 hours away from me. So it's barely sunrise. I can't see anything except for a little bit of crest of sunlight and this red hot lava glowing in the distance and just cresting down the volcano it's coming from. It's not explosive because the volcano erupts probably daily, probably a lot more often than we can even see, because maybe not 15 minutes later, the volcano might have been still erupting, but we couldn't see it anymore because the sunlight was starting to rise. But yeah, that was the whole point of doing it at 3 a.m. was that so you could see the volcano and the lava from 4 or 5 hours away from the top of a different mountain. And it was known as the Indian Nose Hike from San Pedro, Guatemala. And it was just absolutely incredible. That was the highlight of my trip, to actually see real life flowing lava down a volcano.
What was your culinary experience in Guatemala? Cause I can imagine, watching like Anthony Bourdain on CNN, some of the trips that he takes, I would imagine the culinary aspect of the trip was probably mind-blowing.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of food involved, but like maybe pretty typical what you would expect. Burritos, tacos, all sorts of food like that. Lots of street food. We were taking a relatively cheap trip considering we're students and we only had a week, so we kept it pretty simple sometimes. But we also did get to try out a really famous wine and cheese place there with, I think it was 24 different types of cured meats and 28 types of cheeses. And it was just probably one of the best meals I've had in my life. The culture itself was very unique, but the food and other things like that were less so.
So the friends that you went with on the trip, were they all geography majors or earth science for that matter?
Yeah, everyone I went with was earth science major or an environmental geoscience major. Over the years, we've become really close, especially with my involvement in the Brock Geology Club. Yeah, they've been a big part of my life for the last 4 years, and I'm excited to see where they're going to go next.
Well, more recently, I was at the Ontario Association of Geographic and Environmental Educators Conference that was held at St. Andrew's College in Aurora, Ontario. And I was there promoting the initiatives of Geospatial Niagara, and I was also there promoting the GeoNiagara radio show. One of the things that really struck me was the number of teachers from other school boards that bring students to Niagara for field trips, and it's something that I just really hadn't thought about before. Niagara is a playground of urban and rural, and we have all kinds of geology and other cultural assets. But it's good to know that there are teachers that make the effort to bring students down to Niagara to show them what we've got. As Brock students, we have gone up to Peterborough for our field course, and I'm sure there are people in Peterborough thinking, why are you coming to Peterborough for this? But they have some interesting geology and cultural heritage and urban challenges as well. So I guess it only serves to reason that we have people coming down here. So that was it was really fun. I met a lot of passionate teachers, and hopefully they are tuning into this episode of the radio show, and I'd like to give them a shout out. And I'd like to give a shout out to the organizing committee of the conference, because it was an outstanding conference, and I learned a lot, and I made some great connections with some of the other exhibitors there as well. Hopefully in the upcoming episodes, I made connections with some people from the Royal Canadian Geographical Society there, as well as Canadian Geographic Education. So we might be able to get some of them on the show later on in the season, probably January, February, March, somewhere in there, but we'll definitely try to get them on. So joining us in the studio today is Jonah Batovsky, Associate Professor in the Department of Sociology at Brock University. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
He is here today to talk to us about poverty and employment precarity in Niagara. Before we get into that, could you provide us a little bit of background about yourself and sort of what your major research is at Brock?
Sure. So I've been at Brock since 2003. I did a PhD in sociology at U of T. My major research relates to what would be called political and economic sociology. So I've done work on the cycles of capitalism and capitalist crisis to try to look at the largest scale impacts on the day-to-day economy, looking at tendencies for the rate of profit to fall. That's a sort of more theoretical, empirical, and with an empirical element. The other work I'm interested in is work and unions. So I've done work on migrant workers in Niagara. I've also done work on faculty unions. So we did a study of faculty unions in Ontario to look at how they fit into the labor movement and how they deal with this potential conflict between being professionals and also being union members.
So what is PEP Niagara?
So PEP Niagara is a group of eight people who got together to submit a grant to the Trillium Foundation, the Ontario Trillium Foundation. And the people involved are divided up between people at Brock University. One is Jeff Boggs in geography. One is June Corman in sociology. One was Rachel Hirsch, who was one of the research coordinators at the Social Justice Research Institute at Brock, and the other half were people from the United Way. So these are the director of the United Way Niagara and several staff members there. And the goal of this study was to understand how precarious work is affecting Niagara workers. So the nature of precarious work, the extent of precarious work, and some of its impacts that it's having on workers themselves and also the larger community.
So what was the impetus for the survey in Niagara, and what questions are hoped to be answered?
So it's well known that the relationship that workers have with their jobs has changed a lot over the past few decades. So we can gone from a period of time where people had stable careers, often with the same employer for their lifetime, good jobs with benefits, with pensions. And we know that this has been changing since at least the 1980s or so. And we know that jobs are having essentially the opposite characteristics, what we might call broadly bad jobs. So jobs without benefits, jobs without security, without a pension, and possibly non-full-time. So we know in a general sense this is how the world of work and labor markets are transitioning, but it's very important to know exactly how that looks and how that looks in different regions. So I should say that what we're doing in Niagara is replicating work that was done in Toronto, Hamilton area. And this work was done by the United Way in Toronto, in conjunction with researchers initially at McMaster University. In particular, Professor Wayne Luchuk in the Department of Economics at McMaster. So what we wanted to do is, of course, we knew that precarious work is a problem in Niagara, but we thought it's also important to get the data, to be able to say concrete things about the extent and the impacts of precarious work in Niagara. So we also know that groups like the United Way, they need data to be able to know the type of programs that they need to run. They need to have data so they can do their advocacy for groups that they represent. That was the purpose of doing this study in Niagara.
Would that include freelancing work as well? Like, is it any, like, sort of what is the definition of precarious employment?
Okay. That's a great question, and that's really what Wayne Luchuk contributed to this discussion. So I think that we might have sort of a general sense of what precarious work is. So at the very basic level, you know, good jobs versus bad jobs, and I guess a bad job is better than no job. Precarious work means, you know, means the opposite of stable and secure work. But what Wayne Luchuk did is he created a precarity index. So he asked a series of 10 questions to survey respondents. And depending on their scores on those questions, the respondent was placed in one of four categories. And they go from secure being the best to stable to vulnerable to precarious. And I'll give you an example of these questions. One is, do you get paid if you miss work? Another one is, does your income vary week to week? Are you on call? Do you know your schedule in advance? Are you ever paid in cash? Do you have benefits? And this is one sort of interesting one about the climate of work. Can you report health and safety violations? Or if for some reason your boss, your employer is treating you poorly, could you speak up about that? Or do you feel vulnerable, so sufficiently vulnerable that you're not able to do that? So, you know, some people in very secure jobs, you know, would say, yeah, I get paid if I miss work. No, my income doesn't vary. No, I'm not on call. But of course, a substantial number of people would say yes, or very much so. I'm regularly paid in cash. I'm regularly on call. I don't have benefits or very few benefits. And those people would be then put in the precarious category. So it's what we would call it's a continuous variable that divides the population into four groups, ranging from secure at the best quartile to precarious at the lowest, and then the two categories in between. And what Wayne Luchuk found was about 25% of workers were precarious, another 25% were vulnerable, and they were at risk of becoming precarious. And in Niagara, we found roughly that same proportion. So the 25% are the sort of worst off on this index, and then another 25% roughly is vulnerable.
Will the data that's collected be aggregated and made available as open data for use by other community groups?
So I'm not entirely sure the answer to this question. So all I can say is, yes, the intention beginning with the submission of the grant to the research ethics application is to make this data publicly available. We're working with the data librarian at Brock, Heather Whipple, to make this happen. So if it may involve, as you say, aggregating certain variables so that people couldn't be identified. But that's absolutely the goal, because there's a ton of data there. And there's a lot of groups that would be interested, I think, in looking at this data. And our full intention is to make this open source.
So outside of the advisory board, that's part of the sort of the core group of people that are working on the project, what other organizations in Niagara are part of this project?
That's another great question. We have eight people that were originally involved in this project, roughly half and half between the United Way and Brock. And then we have what we call an advisory group. And we made a call to those who might be interested in the results of the project. And we wanted to give them a chance to offer input at various stages throughout the project. So we made the call to labor unions, local politicians at the municipal and provincial and federal level, also the Niagara Workforce Planning Board, the Chamber of Commerce, and other business groups. And what reason we do that, I think there's two main reasons. One is that we don't want this report just to sit on a shelf, the proverbial shelf. We want people to use the data to influence their constituents in some ways, if it's encouraging businesses to work to improve the quality of jobs, if it's politicians trying to reduce the extent of precarity, or at the very least offer services that would be of particular use to precarious workers. So the first reason is to so it doesn't sit on a shelf. The second reason is that we wanted to be sure that our understanding of the data was consistent with the reality. So when I mentioned the groups in the advisory board, I forgot to mention employment agencies. So like one is Employment Ontario, one is Job Gym, one is the YMCA. And these people, they work with precarious workers much more than than I do, for instance. Although, you know, teaching assistants and sessional instructors are precarious workers. So we wanted to make sure that the data and as our interpretation of the data was consistent with our reality out there. The criticism of course, a lot of academic work is that it's distanced. It comes from sort of from outside looking in. So the reason why we wanted this advisory group in part was so that someone could say, this makes no sense. So for instance, one of the people from these employment groups said, benefits, our workers, you know, people who come to our office have really no expectation of benefits anymore, which I think was telling because that's part of the precarity index, if you get benefits or not. But it also suggested to me that in some ways, workers' expectations have been lowered such that benefits are considered to be something that we might not even think of expecting. But all the same, this observation of the way that this index is constructed, these observations by people in the field who have more access and experience with these workers or people looking for work, it's very helpful to give kind of credence to what we're saying.
So how is this data being collected? Is it a combination of ways?
Yeah, so there's essentially two phases to this study. The first is the survey, and the survey went in the field in July of 2017, this past summer. So we hired a group called Leger, which is a large polling agency, and they did a random sample of people in Niagara, and they made certain to sample people from each municipality in Niagara, roughly proportionate to the contribution of that municipality to the region. And what was interesting there is it was really easy to get people to answer these questions. So we got 700 responses in a matter of a couple of weeks. So this was an indication to us that people were interested in this topic and they wanted to spend some time, you know, answering the phone and talking to, you know, a stranger about this. So that was the first stage of the study. It was the, you might call it the quantitative side. So we got this random sample of 700 people living in Niagara and they were between the ages of 25 and 64. That was a decision we made. We wanted people of sort of prime working age. So we excluded on the low end those who might be still in university or still getting their training. And then we also excluded people who are over 65. Not to say those people don't work, but partly for budgetary reasons and partly because that's what Wayne Luchek did in Hamilton, Toronto, we wanted to replicate that. So that, as I was saying, that was phase one, was the quantitative survey of 700 Niagara workers. And if they were between that age and they had worked in the past 6 months, they were included in the survey or they're eligible to respond. And we have that data and we've been working through it, giving sort of preliminary findings to the rest of the Pepin group. And the other phase of the study, the second phase, is face-to-face interviews with respondents coming from that quantitative study. So one of the questions on the original survey was, would you be interested in having a sit-down interview with somebody later on? And this was surprising to us that I don't remember the exact number, but it was about 300. Almost half of the respondents were willing to sit down and have an interview. So what our plan is we've decided that we want to interview people from a range of different, let's call them social locations. So, you know, younger workers, women workers, workers that are from racialized groups, workers who are in particular, precarious. We don't care all that much about the people who are stable. We cared about them as to the extent that we want to know what share each was of the population. But we wanted to know more about precarious workers and a selection, as I said, of precarious workers from different social locations. And those interviews are being planned right now, and then they'll take place over November, the rest of November, December, and into the new year. And the idea there is survey questions come from, you know, the minds of the researcher and often sort of foist categories and classifications on individuals, which may or may not be appropriate or accurate. So by giving the workers a chance to speak about their experience, we may come across, you know, a whole number of issues that we hadn't thought of. And we'll also probably be able to understand, of these 10 questions or these 10 factors that go into the precarity index, we might be able to find out which ones are particularly important to people. And again, they may say something about being precariously employed that's not even covered in the, you know, in the existing 10 questions. So, you know, with this kind of social research, you have to realize that the respondent or the people are the, you know, the experts about their own situation, and their experience may not fit so neatly into our conceptualization of this issue.
How can people participate or assist with this project if they desire to do so?
Well, as I said, the survey has been out in the field, and the surveys are collected. The interviews are taking place, but there's still something or things that people can do if they're interested in this issue. So to start, we have a social media presence. We have a website, a Facebook page where we regularly, you know, post articles and look for commentary. We'll post preliminary and, of course, our final report, which will be out in the spring. And we'll have events where we're going to, you know, have discussions, have presentations over the next 6 to 12 months. I think people can participate because this, I mean, is as important as the data is. I don't think anyone is particularly surprised to hear that there's a lot of precarious workers in Niagara, as there are in Toronto and Hamilton. But like any social problem, in order for it to be fixed or at least move towards a solution, people need to get involved. So I think, you know, people who make decisions about the labor market need to know that this is of great concern to citizens of the region. So, I mean, if we got a lot of attention at our events, if we got a lot of traffic on our website, if people were interested and engaged in this issue, I would be thrilled, because it would suggest that this might be more than just one more research study looking at the kind of sorry state of the world and spark a movement. Of course, the movement has been sparked. The Fight for 15, at least on the wages side, new labor legislation coming out, a revision of the Employment Standards Act. So this thing is going. And the more people who want to jump in and help kind of push the message, the better. And I'm sure a lot of people are, you know, have particular skills that can be involved in this. So check the website. I'm sure it'll be posted, and come to events and get involved, because we really need to show those that, you know, have control over working conditions that people in Niagara want to see better work.
So we should say that the website is pepniagara.ca, and there's plenty of information on there. There is also streams for the Twitter feed and information about any of the events that are up and coming. Are there plans to revisit the survey in 3 to 5 year time frame?
Yes. The answer is yes. I think that, as I said, we know that precarious work is an issue. We want to know, you know, if it's getting better or worse. And if we want to see what the impact would be of, you know, some of this new legislation, the minimum wage, for instance, if that's going to have an impact on the prevalence of precarity. So really, that's what this precarity index was established to do, is like create a benchmark. So initially in about 2014 in Toronto, and now we're doing it in Niagara in 2017. And if we could see it later on, we could look at both the temporal shifts, but also the geographic variation across the province, and of course other places where this is being studied. So of course that all depends on funding and all those things, but it's certainly the intention.
Well, we'd like to thank you for coming on the Geo Niagara Radio Show, Jonah. It was a pleasure to speak with you about this project, and we look forward to seeing the results of the project down the road in the springtime.
Thank you.
Thinking of pursuing a career in the field of geography or tourism? The Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University offers 3 and 4 year bachelor's degrees and a geography graduate program, each with several study options. At Brock University, you'll get an excellent education with hands-on experience through internships, study abroad programs, co-op, labs, seminars, and more. Explore the world through your studies. Come to Brock and experience the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies today. Check us out at brocku.ca/geotour.
Well, that was a great interview with Jonah. We look forward to having him back in the studio to discuss the results of the study and maybe walk through a little bit of the analysis.
Last week was Geography Awareness Week, which is a very exciting time for us here in the studio.
Monday was Day of Geography, and this is a relatively new event where we encourage people who work in geography or geospatial technologies or environmental sciences to share their work day. So if you're interested in seeing some of those stories, you can go to dayofgeography.com and read up about some of the contributors that have supplied stories. All the entries are categorized by career or field, and you can get some more information about that and see what geographers do on a day-to-day basis.
And on Wednesday, November 15th was GIS Day, where we celebrated at the Map and Data GIS Library at Brock University, where they had Jeopardy on GIS, and we were able to hear the contestants for the Esri GIS Scholarship this year.
So this year was a record year for the number of entries in the Esri Scholarship presentations that were held at the Map, Data, and GIS Library at Brock University for GIS Day. What really struck me this year was the wide variety of disciplines that were represented within the presentations. We had everything from a fourth-year BA geography geomatics student who was actually doing research on ice analytics using geographic information systems. There was also a master's candidate from the Cool Climate Oenology and Viticulture program, all the way down to a PhD candidate that was part of the Center for Biotechnology. So this year was a very well-rounded year for entries into the competition. And hopefully in the future, we can maybe get some of these participants on the radio show to discuss what they've done using geospatial technology. Finally, for events for November and December, November 25th is the Niagara Go Geomatics Meetup at Fresco's on 4th Avenue in St. Catharines. And there will be another meetup on December the 16th at same time and same location.
So this month, we have an exciting contest introduced to everybody on our Facebook page. If you are the first person to name the book that we are giving away, you will be the winner. And Darren will even hand deliver the book to your door if you are locally in Niagara, or it can be mailed to you if you are outside the region but still listening to our show.
The name of the book is Why Where Matters: Understanding and Profiting from GPS, GIS, and Remote Sensing, but we'll simply accept Why Where Matters in the comment section of Episode 3's posting on the Geo Niagara Radio Show Facebook page. So if you want to connect with us on Facebook, it is the Geo Niagara Radio Show. If you want to connect with us on Twitter, it's at Geo Niagara. But I want to reiterate that we will only accept the entry through the Facebook page in the Episode 3 posting. So again, the answer for the question is Why Where Matters.
So that's super exciting. What a deal. A free book just for listening to our show. So once again, if you'd like to contact us, our Facebook page is the Geo Niagara Radio Show, and the Twitter is at Geo Niagara. We'd like to thank everybody for listening.
Our next episode will air on Wednesday, December 20th at 6 p.m. right here on 103.7 CFBU.
My name is RJ.
And I'm Darren.
Good night.
Good night.
You have been listening to the Geo Niagara Radio Show, sponsored by the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University.